Welcome to Talking History, a series of talks from the Farnham U3A World History Group. The views expressed in this talk are representative of the views held at the time of the material being discussed. They do not necessarily represent the views of the speaker, the Farnham U3A World History Group, nor the team at the Mr. T Podcast Studio. In this talk, the second of our short talks on entertainment and entertainers, Adrian Martin tells us about Thomas Henry Sargent, better known as the cheeky chappie Max Miller.
I find the whole way that comedians work very interesting because I'm a lawyer, words interest me. The way they use words and the way they time a joke, it's all interesting. And you watch a good barrister, the way they use words and the way they time it all, playing to a jury or a judge, it's all the same thing. And so Max Miller, I was conscious of. We lived in Sussex. We used to go to Brighton. And I remember as a small child, I was aged about six. My parents, very unusually, didn't have that much money, wanted to take us out to a meal in a pub. This was the Ship in Brighton. And we went in, and I was struck by the atmosphere. There was an excitement, a buzz in the air. My father said, "We want a table for four in your dining room." And they said, "Oh, you can't possibly do that. We've got children here." Anyway, my father persuaded them, and we sat in the dining room in the Ship Hotel behind a screen, so we didn't see anything untoward. And Brighton had a buzz, and Max Miller was a Brighton man, born in Kemp Town with supposed Romany blood in him, to a very, very poor family. They really struggled. If you didn't pay the rent, what they did, landlords, they took the windows and doors out of the house. That was the way they got rid of the tenants. He was born in 1894, and he died there in 1963. He was devoted to Brighton, and he was a Brighton person. He much preferred performing in the south because he always wanted to get home to his beloved Brighton. He was regarded as the greatest stand-up comedian of his generation, and he is still revered by certain people. But the world moves on, and we now have political correctness, we have various things. How do we feel about someone like Max Miller? How do we feel about someone like Benny Hill? Is he considered politically incorrect? If you want an idea of what his material was like, think of Humphrey Littleton in I'm Sorry, I Haven't a Clue. There were a lot of innuendos and this sort of thing. He left school at 12, barely able to read and write. He went and sold fish and chips, laboured, and was a golf caddy. He was actually a very good golfer. He then trained as a motor mechanic and earned the nickname as Swanky Sergeant, because he definitely had a certain confidence and air about him. 1914, the war comes along and he joins the Sussex Yeomanry and he's sent to Mesopotamia. In the war, he's blinded for 3 days. That had a great effect in him. He never forgot that. He had a reputation for being incredibly mean. He earned an awful lot of money, a fortune. But if you went out with him, he always sort of was slow to get to the bar, so he didn't have to buy the round of drinks. However, he never forgot the blindness, and one day his wife came back to the house in the war, and he said, "We're moving tomorrow." And she said, "What do you mean?" "Well, we're moving because I've given the house to St. Dunstan's," St. Dunstan's being the charity at Rottingdean, which provided homes for people blinded. And he just made his house over to them so they could use it because of the demand for it, unfortunately. It was said that he was so tight with his money because when he was a child, every penny was valued. I wondered whether to give you a little song to wake you up. Brace yourselves. If ladies want to leave the room, please do so now. He used to wear the most extravagant costumes on stage, and he did tap dancing. And he sang, played the guitar. So this is the song. A boy and a girl, they go hiking. They're both of them wearing their shorts. The boy and the girl, they get thirsty. They go for a couple of ports. When the boy and the girl get back from hiking, the neighbours get all in a tiz. For he's come home wearing her shorts, and she's come home wearing his. This is the sort of thing. It's music hall stuff. Is that harmless? Is it smut? My wife, who's got Scottish blood in her, thinks my pleasure at some of these jokes is a little bit sad. He comes back after the First World War, determined to be an entertainer, because he'd actually joined a sort of a troupe of entertainers in the war. And he went to London, but he wasn't any good, so he joined Jack Shepherd's concert party, an Alfresto theatre company on Brighton Beach. Whilst there, he met his wife, Kathleen Marsh, a fellow performer. She had a good voice. She was very strict with him. She was definitely posher than him. Her brother became the mayor of Brighton. The marriage survived for many years, but it was a shrewd move on his part because she was a really bright businesswoman. And she also said, Thomas Henry Sargent is not getting you anywhere. So she decided he should be called Max Miller. And one of the reviews talked about him being the cheeky chappy. So he said, OK, let's market you as Max Miller, the cheeky chappy. And that was an enormous breakthrough. So he starts performing. They start, incidentally, as a double act, but it doesn't really work. I don't think she's quite up to that. And he was always happiest on his own. He had people accompanying him, but he was a solo performer. It's interesting, preparing for this talk, he was regarded as naughty, and some of his jokes might be offensive to women, but one of the points they make, he put across this camp image. His wife made his costumes, and he'd wear plus fours, and she'd make them out of curtain material and things like that. And he would look fairly extraordinary. And he used to play up to this camp image. And whether that's because women feel less threatened by someone with a camp image who's making slightly risky jokes at their expense, I don't know. Because he'd make little asides. He was more, you know what I am. You know what I am. Well, of course, he wasn't anything like that at all. But he pretended he was. And he was always making these little asides. He trod the line between going over the top and staying within the boundaries very carefully. He said, you must be audacious, be daring, but never be knowing. And I think what he means by that is, I think Benny Hill probably was knowing. There was something slightly salacious about his charging after ladies sort of thing. Whereas Max Miller was more fun. It's a fine line, but he wouldn't have had any swearing in his jokes, and the modern comedians, he would hate some of the material, the language they use, because he was much more subtle about it. But he was always walking the line slightly. Quite often, the management of a theatre would be at the side, or he was always pretending they were, oh, they're listening, you know, and he'd go on like this. But he knew how to play the audience, and he was undoubtedly very funny. There are a couple of jokes I will only tell to men only. He got onto the radio. Radio didn't really work for him because when you saw him in person, he was so friendly and he was cheeky. He'd pick on a member of the audience and have a go at a lady. But there was nothing malicious about it. Whereas I think on the radio, the jokes may have appeared cruder because he wasn't there and people weren't seeing that it was all good fun and they were all there to have a good time. The money poured in. The BBC didn't like him. It is alleged they banned him twice. Whether they did or not is open to debate. The joke which is alleged to have got him banned from the BBC, I will only tell to men. But he was undoubtedly pushing the borders. But that sort of thing, it did him well. to go, word going, oh, have you heard he's not on the BBC? Well, the BBC didn't really ban him, I think. They just didn't put on a show. But he let the word get out, oh, he's been banned by the BBC. So they all poured into the theatres, and he got £1,000 a night for a performance and was raking in the money. So he loved live audience. His ability to play to an audience makes the joke certainly less blue. He played 3 Royal Variety performances. One of the things he used to come on, he says, do you want the blue book or the white book? And that was the jokes, the blue jokes or the white book. He went to the Royal Variety performance in 1937, and he shouts up to the Royal Box, do you want the blue book or the white? And they shout, blue! His last performance of the 1937 Variety performance, who should be there but Jack Benny, the American entertainer. Now, Jack Benny was given 20 minutes, and he was told he got 6 minutes. He wasn't having any of that. So he just went on and on and on. They were trying to decide, come on. And he turned to the audience, do you want some more? Said, oh, yeah. So he just did that completely. And Val Parnell, at the end, came up to him and said, you'll never work for me. He was the head of the Moss Empire. You'll never work for me again. And Max Miller turned to him and said, well, you're £120,000 too late, mate. And then, 6 months later, Moss Empires were in dire financial problems. No one was going to the London Palladium. Who do they bring in? They bring back Max Miller, who fills the house again, so they re-employed him. He recorded songs, but gradually, in the 1950s, music hall was beginning to die a little bit. I think Roy Hudd had his roots in the tradition of music hall, but he knew that the world had moved on. He still did okay. His health began to deteriorate, and in 1958, as his health began to deteriorate, he started to drink. He probably needed 2 drinks to get going, and he had the 3rd, and then he began to lose it a bit. So by 1958, his heart problems were coming, and he retired. He lasted for a few more years and died in Brighton. In my mind, a brilliant entertainer. It was said that John Osborne modelled the character of Archie Rice in The Entertainer. You know the play, The Entertainer? John Osborne said in his autobiography, this is not so. Archie was a man, Max was a god. Anyway, when he died, his wife was somewhat surprised to discover that he had left quite a large amount of money to a lady which she didn't know anything about, and I suspect that she was one of many. So a brilliant entertainer. Probably, would he be in trouble now? I don't know. Listen, if you've got the courage, go and listen in the privacy of your room to some of his jokes on YouTube. Much admired by a lot of comedians these days. I said he was mean. He was extremely generous with his time. I saw this clip, Bob Monkhouse, Roy Hudd, and other comedians all said he may have been tight with his money, but when they were starting their careers, he would sometimes listen to them, and he'd say, OK, and he'd spend an hour or so just dissecting the act and say, look, you did this wrong. Think about doing this. Try and do this. So he was very generous to help other comedians, though he couldn't stand Tommy Trinder, who he thought copied his act. And he also didn't like Charlie Chester. Well, I never liked Charlie Chester. The reason he didn't like Charlie Chester was that Charlie Chester looked a bit like Max Miller, and he thought he was trying to pretend he was his son. So a census taker was going round the house to house checking on children, and he asked a woman, have you got any children? Yes, 13, but I'm not having any more now that I've got my deaf aid. He said, what's that got to do with it? Well, every night we went to bed, my husband used to say, are we going to sleep or what? And I used to say, what? So that's the sort of humour. And that is a little bit of fun. And I don't know whether I've got to resign from the U3A or not.
This podcast has been produced by the Mr. T Podcast Studio, in association with the Farnham U3A World History Group. Thank you very much for listening to this talk.